Welcome to Flyover Conservative Podcast with David and Stacey Whited, where we break down current events and examine culture through the lens of conservative Christian values.
You know, when we started the Flyover Conservative Podcast, the goal was really this one idea. We knew that people were sitting back. They wanted Donald Trump to do 80 million things to save America. This was in January of 21. And we knew the answer was really 80 million of us doing one thing each day to save our own country. Yep. And you kind of begin, you want to have great conversations with great people. And every once in a while, you come across a person that if we started this show and only had one interview, it would be worth it for the guests that we have today.
That is exactly right. You can kind of see from my list here all of these accolades that I'm going to read through because I think it's so important. It'll go right into our interview setting it up. Most of you know him. In fact, you would all know his name, but I just want to talk about some of the things he's accomplished. So he is a best-selling author. He's a former Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, 2016 Republican presidential candidate, former director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins.
I think he's like a brain surgeon.
That's
basically
true. Very
smart. Some of our listeners there.
Exactly. Founder and chairman of the American Cornerstone Institute, recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom. He holds more than 70 honorary doctorate degrees, which we're going to talk about that today. He's a husband. That's a huge accomplishment. He's a father of three boys and three daughter-in-laws, and he is the grandfather of eight grandchildren. Welcome to the show, Dr. Ben Carson!
Yay! I'm absolutely delighted to be with you all, and thank you for being patriots.
Oh, it's an honor. What an honor.
I was laying in bed thinking about this, woke up thinking about this conversation with you today. I took some extra B vitamins, trying to, you know, make sure I'm ready to go, but just excited to have a conversation with you.
Fantastic. Well, I appreciate the fact that you guys are willing to get up every morning and do something like this, because it'd be so easy just to go and enjoy life and forget about everybody else.
Well, you know, we read there at the last thing, which I think is huge, the father of eight grandchildren. We have three. And that was why we even started Flyover Conservatives, because our son actually came to us and he said, if we don't do something to help to save this country, my children are not going to be free, which is our grandchildren are not going to be free. He said, I'll do whatever it takes. And we set everything to the side and we're like, okay, God, use us. Yeah. We're going to bring our time, our talent, and our treasure. You use it. And I love that, because God is so good. We could bring our two loaves and a few fish, and he's like, hey, look what we can do with this, you know? And I see that is something that you've done with your life as well. You're like, I'll bring whatever. I'll bring my time, talent, and treasure. God, use it.
And boy, has he multiplied it for you.
Well, my wife was not very enthusiastic when I first put my toe in the water with the political world. But then we started having grandchildren. And then her enthusiasm changed 180 degrees, because she realized that they would have no future if we don't get involved. And that goes for all Americans. You know, we need to recognize that it's not just how we feel. It's not just our feelings, but what about our children? What about our grandchildren? What's going to happen to them? What is going to be their future if we only think about ourselves? And, you know, not to be political, but, you know, there are some people who say, I don't like this particular politician. You know, he has good policy, but I don't like him. Mm-hmm. He irritates me. Well, those people need to think about their children. And they need to think about what are the alternatives and what's going to happen to their kids and to their grandchildren.
That's exactly
right. At the top of your Twitter feed, you actually have a picture of you in the Oval Office with President Trump. And several times when you make posts, you use the term friend. You know, you say, like, you know, congratulations to my friend, President Donald Trump, for his big win, you know, on Super Tuesday. You have that. And he's a complicated character. And sometimes we take that in context when we read the Bible. David's a complicated character. God used him. Moses, complicated character. You're married to somebody. Today's our 31st anniversary. So
yes.
We're kind of, you know, and I'm like, woo! You know,
thank you.
You know, we're both complicated characters. We've built on the good and you work through it. But for some reason in the political realm, people do struggle with that with Donald Trump. He's a complicated character. Wins lost. You actually know the man. How have you processed that?
He and I became friends during the campaign. And I actually told him while we were campaigning against each other that he was going to win. I said, wow. I said, the Lord has a special place for you, a job for you to do. And we talk about that all the time. But now we've become good friends in the process of all this. Philosophically, we're peas in a pod. Personality-wise, we're quite different.
Agree.
That's okay. Like, you look at that, if you're a fan of an NFL team, like, you know, if the guy playing quarterback, if they had 11 of him, they probably wouldn't win. You know, I mean, you need those pieces, and you can't help but look at Donald Trump's life. And I don't want to make this all about him, but you have a unique perspective. You can't help but look at it and say, wow, as he was doing all of these things, it's almost like God was preparing him for this moment. He was used to dealing with the media. And you look at the things he's dealing with now, any one of them, I'd probably just go to bed and put the covers over my head. Nobody likes to be called names and, you know, this kind of stuff.
Even the court system, everything they put him through.
And if financially do it, who else could withstand this kind of attack?
Can you imagine what the real estate market is like in Manhattan and the sharks and things that are out there, and what you need to do to be successful in that market? Well, you know, the political scene is just as bad. You know, they call it a swamp. I say swamp is a compliment. It's really a cesspool. And need somebody who really has a lot of grit to deal with that. And I don't think a lot of the American people recognize what's going on right now, because if we allow the Justice Department to be used to eliminate a major political opponent, this is no longer America. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when Benjamin Franklin came out of that Constitution Hall in 1787, and he was asked by a woman, "Sir, what do we have here? A monarchy or a republic?" And he said, "A republic, if you can keep it."
Yeah.
Well, we're as close to losing it right now as we have ever been. And, you know, that's the reason that I wrote the book, The Perilous Fight. It's just we're in the same situation we were when we were fighting for our freedom from England. And if we don't realize that, and if we don't get involved, we're going to lose that fight. And it's critical right now that everybody get involved. But first of all, they have to know what it is that we're fighting, who our
enemy.
That
is so true. That's true. Again, I want to make sure everybody knows you have a book coming out May the 14th, 2024, called The Perilous Fight, Overcoming Our Culture's War on the American Family. And you can pre-order it wherever books are sold. That's the book right there. So you go on, pre-order it, because it's going to come out May the 14th, 2024. And this is something that we all need to be reading.
And I want to jump into the media a little bit, because that's a fight that you didn't have in the medical world. And, you know, you adapted to it with such grace and wit and clever wisdom and your handling of the media. It was almost like seeing a dad, like when he's wrestling with a five-year-old, you know, they kind of put their hand on their head and the little kid's swinging, you know. It's almost watching you almost had that kind of imagery for me. And you got the word fight in there. You know, if you're in a war, and the war that we're in is more intellectual, it's a battle. It takes place at the water coolers and the church foyer, Thanksgiving tables. And I encourage our listeners to dig into this book and to dig into your concepts, because you've thought through them deeply in private. You're bringing them into public. But that's the bullets for this war, or the ideas, and the way you articulate them is so clear and rooted in like Solomon, like biblical wisdom. I want to go in the Wayback Machine real quick to 9 years ago, and I think this will set the table for the rest of our conversation. It's a clip of you handling a panel, and I believe it's a CNN group interview. You're sort of surrounded. You know, it's like those kung fu movies. You got somebody on every side, and you're just like, you know, Neo in the Matrix. You know, they're slow, you're fast. I want to play this clip and then break it down, because there's about three or four things that are so pertinent to today. And
it was 9 years ago.
And it's 9 years ago. I'm a little bit interested what that Ben Carson would say about our current situations. Let's play this clip real quick.
Let's clarify. Are you saying that America is like Nazi Germany? I'm confused by that comment.
No, what I am saying, and to me, it doesn't sound like a complex statement at all. I said the people in Nazi Germany did not, most of them, believe in what Hitler was doing. But instead of protesting, instead of registering their displeasure, They simply decided to go along to get along. Mm-hmm. That is a very dangerous thing
and
to
is do. That happening?
And I was using that as an example of how dangerous that can be. And I'm making a point to the American people that if, in fact, you feel differently about what's going on, you should not be shut up.
Doctor,
you need to talk
no
about
one
it,
right? is being shut up in America. What you're on think? Fox critical News. Practices. You write books. Newt talks. What Stephanie talks.
Correctness?
I talk.
What is that?
I don't engage in political correctness. Oh, maybe you do. But, doctor, these are your quotes. You said we live in a Gestapo age, and this is a quote, we're very much like Nazi Germany, and then you write a book about America the Beautiful. That seems to be such a contradiction.
Well, did you read the book?
I have not read the book, no.
I rest my case.
Why?
You don't even know what the book is about.
The fact that I haven't read your book.
Because you're making these claims and then using the fact that I read a book to back up your claims, and you haven't even read the book.
I'm using the title of your book, America the Beautiful, and that's a beautiful phrase.
Did you ever hear the phrase that you can't judge a book by its cover? Do you know why people say that?
Maybe.
Because you need to read the book.
Then maybe you can't judge your book by the title. I don't know.
So good. That was 9 years ago. Now we see where we are as a country.
Absolutely. And, you know, all the things that I talk about, all the dangers that I warned about way back then have unfortunately come to fruition. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people think that the things that are going on in our country right now that few people actually agree with, but a lot of people won't speak out about, you know, those things have been planned. If you go back and you look at the congressional record from January to 10, 1963, congressmen from Florida actually read into the congressional record the 45 goals of communism in America. Mm-hmm. And so you can see 60 years ago, they were saying things like we have to gain control of the public schools and the teacher unions so we can indoctrinate the kids. We have to gain control of the media so that we can spoon feed the American people only what we want them to know and shield them from the things that we don't want them to know. Mm-hmm. Drive wedges between parents and their children. Get God out of everything. Replace faith in God with faith in government. Make sexual perversion normalized. And natural and healthy. I mean, it is pretty amazing. I think that's the reason that Khrushchev said to Eisenhower, your grandchildren's children will live under our system. Mm. We won't have to even fire a shot. You know, we think we won the Cold War, but they planted the seeds a long time ago, and they're coming to fruition now. And we have to understand what is happening in our country. We have to understand that the fight for our freedom and for the American way is alive and well, and we have to be in it. And if we're just observers, we're going to lose.
It accelerated so quickly. I wonder if maybe they played too many cards too fast, because some of these things you could say, you know, decades ago, but really in the last 3 years, there's been such an acceleration. You know, we live in Kansas City. There are schools in rural Missouri and rural Kansas that have litter boxes in the classroom, in the bathrooms, for kids that they think they're a cat. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't have ever, you know, been able to say in the past. There was a report that came out yesterday saying over $2 billion have been lost to Republican candidates because of Gmail's censorship, putting conservative emails into spam, a 77% rate compared to less than like 11% rate for liberals. The Twitter files, you know, Matt Tlaib and people have put that out about how, you know, CIA, mm-hmm. FBI control of the tech communities during you know, the last few years, and their control of messaging. Everybody probably watching this has had a ding or a warning or something on Facebook because you shared something that's now common knowledge, that sunshine and maybe losing a couple of pounds and vitamin D was good for you, you know, during the pandemic, and you were put back for that. So in every branch of society, mm-hmm. they've overplayed their hand and controlled people for things that are contradictory to common sense by calling good evil and evil good.
And contradictory to our Constitution as well. But what they've discovered, and here's the dangerous part, they've discovered that they can do almost anything and get away with it. You know, people will maybe utter a few complaints, but they don't care. They continue to do what they do. I remember when I gave the 2013 presidential prayer breakfast speech. Within 3 weeks after that speech, I was audited. First time in my life. And the next year, audited also, because they can get, you know, fortunately, there isn't anything for them to find. They can audit me all they want.
Right.
But it's a nuisance.
Sure.
It's a nuisance and it's costly too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the ways that the left has discovered that they can intimidate people is by ruining them financially. Look at what they're trying to do to President Trump right now.
Yeah.
With these absolutely outrageous amounts of money. You know, no one has ever had anything like that happen to them before. But is anybody doing anything about it? They say, we can do whatever we want. Nobody's going to do anything. It's the same thing that has happened in some of our elections. You know, they come up at the last minute and they say, signatures don't have to match. The addresses don't have to match. You don't have to have an ID. And we tolerate it. So why wouldn't they keep doing it?
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. You know, our slogan here at Flavor Conservatives is wake up, speak up, and show up. You know, the Lord really showed us back in 2020, before we started this podcast, that there was a real pride in the silent majority, being the silent majority, almost patting ourselves on the back. Hey, we're part of the silent majority. And that's why our country is where it is today, because the plumb line of Jesus has been taken out of all these different spheres of influence. And so I would just ask you, you know, as we're talking to people, as we do interviews, one thing I found to be very much in common is it's almost like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, where, you know, they're coming against something like, we will not bow. No matter what happens, you can throw us into the fire. You can do this, but we will not bow. And I'm kind of finding that to be across the everyone that we've interviewed, that same kind of a thought process is, I will not bow. And I see that in you. You know, you have all these accolades, you know, best-selling author, former Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, all of these things that I read.
70 honorary degrees.
Yeah, 70. I'd like to get
one. That'd be cool.
But I would just ask you, because there's a lot here on the line, you know, and you keep stepping out there. You keep writing books. You keep using your voice. You're not bowing down, you know. So who is Dr. Ben Carson, really? Like, who are you as a person, and why do you keep standing up during this time?
Well, you know, I recognize that whatever persecution you endure, what is that against the backdrop of eternity? Mm-hmm. It really doesn't mean a whole lot. And, you know, yes, it's nice to have actually 75 honorary doctorate degrees.
Wow. That's amazing.
But what does that mean against the backdrop of eternity? And I would much rather have God's favor than the favor of man. Mm. Because really doesn't mean a whole lot in a perspective of everything. But at the same time, you know, I would obviously prefer to be nice, to be loved, to be liked, to love people and to like people. But you always have to keep things in perspective. What does God want? And what do you have to do to stay in his favor, because the rest of it just doesn't particularly matter, quite frankly. Requires courage, though. And this is the thing that I find to be missing. When I was running for president, and you know, I went to every part of America, and I found a lot of people who have common sense. And I was glad to see that. But I didn't find a lot of people who had the kind of courage to stand up for what they believed in. And you cannot be the land of the free if you're not the home of the brave. You got to be willing to stand up for what you believe in. And particularly the place where children got that kind of courage in the past was through their families. Mm-hmm. That's where their identity came from. That's where their belief systems came from. But now we have an attack on the American families. We're not just losing traditional American families. We actually have people who are attacking them, who are making fathers seem unnecessary, like doting fools.
Yeah.
The mother is the superhero who always mm-hmm. has the right thing to say. Alternative lifestyles, particularly sexual lifestyles, are put forward as the preferred way of doing things. We're confusing our children. Look at what we're doing to the kids. You know, the human brain is an amazing, amazing organ system. I mean, it has billions and billions of neurons, hundreds of interconnections, can process more than 2 million bits of information in 1 second. And it starts developing at fertilization. And millions of neurons are being added every day, right up until the time of birth. That's why when a baby is born, they sleep for 20 to 22 hours a day, because that brain is still developing so quickly. It continues to develop right into your 20s. So these children who are 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, who are being told, you may not be a girl, you may not be a boy, they have brains that are still in the process of developing. As children, they're naturally curious. They're very suggestible. So can you imagine what you're doing to them when you're feeding them these kinds of pieces of information with their suggestibility? Mm. And that's why you're seeing these huge numbers of people identifying LGBTQ. Exactly what was said in that 1963 congressional record, making sexual perversion normal, natural, and healthy. That's a big part of fundamentally changing us into something else. And of course, destroying our families and destroying our faith destroys our future, because what is it doing to our children? And you look at the way they've been manipulated. You look at what's going on in Israel right now, and how so many of the college kids have been brainwashed into believing that Hamas and the things that they did maybe didn't even really happen. You know, maybe this is all just propaganda, and that it's the Israelis who the horrible people who are doing all these things. If you can brainwash a large number of people into thinking that way, think what you can do with a society. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the way our history, the history of this country, is being distorted.
Yeah.
You know, your history gives you your identity, which gives you the foundation for your belief system. So that's the reason when ISIS conquers an area, what is the first thing they do? They destroy the history. They take down the statues. They destroy the libraries, the universities, because they want to have a clean slate and to be able to manipulate people. We're allowing that to happen in our country without ISIS. Mm-hmm. And we need to understand what's going on. We need to learn from our history. We need to teach all of our history, the good, the bad, and the ugly. But the fact of the matter is, there's a heck of a lot more good than there is bad and ugly. And if it's taught the right way, I think our children come out and are very proud of who we are and are willing to move forward, learn from our mistakes, and make it even better.
Mm. Man, I think that is a key component to what's happening here. We'll have the link down below, your book, The Perilous Fight. The subtitle, Overcoming Our Culture's War on the American Family. There's so much to be proud of, and we're not taught that. I've loved watching you for years. I want to play a cut from a speech you gave in Columbia a while back, and you kind of walk through a brief history lesson, and it's like just like one of those little samples they give at Costco, you know, like that's good. I maybe want more of that. Like, I don't know why this isn't foundational in our school system, the things that you're saying. I want to play just a clip of this to give people
And when it starts, you're talking about a six-year-old, and you're talking about yourself. So just so the audience knows that when we
the
cut
context,
in,
yeah.
That's the context that he's talking about himself.
Of any nationality could have taken that six-year-old black boy and walked down the streets of this city, given him a black history lesson he would have never forgot,
could start by pointing to his shoes and saying it was Jan Matzliger, a black man who invented the automatic shoe lasting machine, revolutionized the world of shoes, and go out into that clean street, Charles Brooks, a black man who invented the street sweeper, those big machines with the brushes on them. And down that street comes a big refrigerated tractor trailer truck, and you can tell them that it was Frederick Jones. There's my wife. Okay. Frederick Jones, who invented the air conditioning system for trucks, later adopted for airplanes, boats, and trains. And it comes to a stop at the red light. It was Garrett Morgan who invented the traffic signal. You can tell how he invented the gas mask, saved lots of lives during the war. While you're talking about the war, Henrietta Bradbury, a black woman who invented the underwater cannon, made it possible to launch torpedoes from submarines. You walk past the hospital, Charles Drew, his contributions to blood banking, understanding the function of blood plasma. Daniel Hale Williams, the first successful open heart surgery in the world, had an operative mortality rate of less than 1.5%. You look up at the surgical light, Thomas Edison, you didn't know he was black, did you? Well, he wasn't, but but his right-hand man, Lewis Latimer, was, and you can tell how Lewis Latimer came up with the filament that made the light bulb work for more than 2 or 3 days, invented the electric lamp diagram, the telephone for Alexander Graham Bell, was a tremendous inventor in his own right. And then you walk past the railroad track, and you talk about Andrew Beard, the automatic railroad car coupler, spurred on the Industrial Revolution, Elijah McCoy, the automatic lubrication system for locomotive engines, had so many inventions, people are always trying to imitate him. And they would say, is that a McCoy? Is that the real McCoy? You've got racist people like David Duke talking about the real McCoy, don't even know who he's paying homage to. And I'm just barely scratching the surface. I can go on for a long time talking about those contributions. But I'll tell you what's really great about America. I can take that same walk down the street for virtually any nationality and point out great things that were contributed by that nationality. And that's how America became great so fast, because we had so many people with so many talents. Our diversity is not a problem, it is a blessing.
So wow. Powerful.
I could listen to you for hours, and I just want people to get this book, The Perilous Fight. But why isn't that kind of information the lead-in in our school system versus division and selective history and gender confusion?
Well, it's much easier to control people if you divide them. And, you know, telling little white kids that they're oppressors and that they're all their ancestors are oppressors and making them feel guilty makes them much easier to manipulate. Telling little black kids and minorities that they're victims and that no matter what you do, the system is stacked against you. How is that helpful in any way to a society that is trying to advance? But that's what we're saying, and that's what we have to fight. You know, they want people to feel like they're victims, because that way they can say, but the government can help you. Mm. We can be your savior, rather than your own hard work, your faith in God. You know, those are the things that made America into a great nation. The can-do attitude, not the what-can-you-do-for-me attitude.
It's huge. Is that why you started AmericanCornerstone.org?
That's the exact reason. I figured at the end of the Trump administration, I would finally get to retire. I tried to retire and I had failed, and I ended up in government. I said, this time I'm going to get it right. But it wasn't long after the 2020 election, seeing what was happening to our country, I said, I would have no fun whatsoever on the golf course or cruising around the world watching my country go down the tubes. You know, this country has provided so much for me, you know, coming up from, you know, a desperate situation with dire poverty, with bad grades, with all kinds of things stacked against you. And everything was there that you needed to succeed. You know, they make a big difference talking about the wealth gap in our country, the wealth gap between blacks and whites. And there is a wealth gap. That's a legitimate concern. But they try to make the blacks into victims. And the fact of the matter is, if you look at Nigerians who come to this country, mm-hmm. Ghanaians who come to this country, and from several other countries, there's no wealth gap. Mm-hmm. They have black skin, but there's no wealth gap. Now, why do you think that is? Well, you go to a Nigerian home, what you will find is that the bachelor's degree is the baseline. That's where you start. And that there's a tremendous emphasis on the family.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, if you go to a traditional black American family that has those same values, family, education, faith, there's no wealth gap either. So maybe it isn't the color of the skin. Maybe it's the philosophy that governs that home.
Mm. We had a gentleman on the show. We've become friends with him. He's a worship leader. He's a photographer. He worked, you know, in the Trump administration as a photographer named Jonathan Williams, and African-American. He made the comment. He says, you know, he's a conservative, you know, loves Trump, all this stuff. He goes, when I go to family gatherings, they hate Trump and they hate any reference to him. But if I talk about the values, family, like he goes, they believe mm-hmm. with the policies of the conservative, but they can't even imagine the idea. He goes, the idea of being a conservative is almost treated like a traitor. But he goes, right. But he goes, the things that they value as a family are all in alignment. That's why I vote the way I do, is because of their values. And he goes, there's just a huge disconnect, you know, there in that space. You know, what? Why is that? There he is. He's an amazing young man.
It's interesting to see currently that there seems to be a migration in the black community and the Hispanic community toward Republicans and toward conservatism. And I think a lot of people are drawn to Donald Trump, actually, because you don't have to wonder about what he's thinking.
I mean, true.
He's pretty transparent.
Yep.
And, but they also look at what did he do as opposed to what he says. You know, I will readily admit that sometimes the things that come out of his mouth are a little irritating to various people. But what did he do when mm-hmm. he was president? And you can't really argue with the results. You know, we were energy independent. Mm-hmm. There was very low to no inflation going on. You know, crime was being dealt with. You know, he had the First Step program.
Yeah.
Actually going into prison, trying to give people a better life and trying to make the punishments that were meted out fair and equitable to people. I mean, there were so many things that were going on that were so much better, and everybody realizes that. People in the minority community have eyes and ears just like everybody else, and a brain to be able to analyze these things, and that's why we're saying that. And, you know, we have to recognize that one of the things that distinguished us from countries is that we have faith in God. Our founding document, the Declaration of Independence, says that our rights come from our Creator. Mm. Therefore, they cannot be taken away by government. And understanding that, and when Alexis de Tocqueville came to this country in 1831 to study it on behalf of the Europeans, because they were fascinated. They couldn't comprehend how could this nation, barely 50 years old, be competing with us on virtually every level. This is ridiculous. They can't do it. What's going on? So he came over here and he looked at our government, and he was very impressed by the checks and balances that existed in our government. He looked at our economic system. He was very impressed by the atmosphere that encouraged entrepreneurship and innovation. And then he looked at our educational system, and he was blown away because he could find, you know, a mountain man in the middle of the forest, and the guy could read.
Right.
And the guy, he could tell you about the Declaration of Independence. But the thing, and you know, you look at the exit exam for a sixth grade certificate 150, 200 years ago. See what you had to know to get a sixth grade certificate. I think it would be very embarrassing to many people today because adults couldn't take that test.
Right.
But the thing that impressed them more than all of that were the churches and the sermons that came out of those pulpits. And, you know, that was what encouraged and inspired a ragtag bunch of militiamen to defeat the most powerful military force on the face of the earth. It would be like China. It would be like Cuba defeating the United States. But it happened. And it gave the people a moral base. And he concluded his two-volume set, Democracy in America, by saying, America is great because America is good. Mm-hmm. And if America ceases to be good, she will cease to be great. We see that happening right now.
Dr. Carson, last few minutes here before we wrap up. You know, I heard your story. You raised, you know, by a single mom. You know, I'm youngest of six, raised by a single mom. Dad wasn't around in my life. And I look at like, that's something I've kind of worked to overcome. I'm like the first generation of a new cycle. I got a son that's a great, great husband. He has three children. And I kind of mentally started, you know, like a new cycle with that. You have three sons, three daughter-in-laws. You have eight grandchildren. You kind of became the first in that cycle and started that over. What advice do you have as we wrap up? If this was like a time capsule and your eight grandchildren were going to hear you down the road, the dining room table conversation, family value, what advice would you give them to keep perpetuating that, where they have the ability to stand on your shoulders and see further, where they continue that on? What advice do you have them when it comes to being a father, being a husband, you know, those
being a leader
mm-hmm. in your home? As a man, what advice do you have for those eight grandchildren?
Well, the important thing is to talk to them. You know, right now, a lot of people let the grandkids and the kids get their values from social media mm-hmm. and from their friends. And they don't spend a lot of time talking to their parents and to their grandparents, finding out what life was like for them, whether the lessons that they learned along the way, because the difference between a fool and a wise person is a wise person can learn from someone else's mistakes.
Yes.
A fool has to make all the mistakes on their own.
Yeah.
You know, develop that relationship with those kids, you know, and grandparents and grandkids have a special relationship already because they have a common enemy.
So, so true.
So good.
So true.
It was so wonderful for my kids growing up because my mother lived with us. And she was able to impart to them her wisdom, that generational wisdom, the same thing that she gave to my brother and me. My mother was the subject of a lot of criticisms when we were growing up, and her friends were saying, you can't make boys stay in the house and read books. They'll grow up and they'll hate you. And I would overhear them say, you know, they're right, mother, but it doesn't matter. We still have to read those books. And I think she had the last laugh because one son became a brain surgeon and the other became a rocket scientist. So
wow. That is remarkable. What a testimony.
Yeah.
That is great. I've heard you also talk about how you read a proverb a day.
More than one proverb. I start every day reading from the book of Proverbs, and I end every day reading from my wife and I. We both do that. We discuss that. And, you know, it actually shows you in my life that God has a sense of humor. And I'll tell you why. I developed that affinity for the book of Proverbs, which was written by who?
Solomon.
My middle name is Solomon. So affinity. But more interesting, when Solomon became the king of Israel, what was the first thing that happened that brought him great acclaim? Two women came to him claiming to be
the baby.
And what did he advocate? Divide the babies. Well, dividing babies is when I became very well known to
Yes.
Wow.
It is great. You look back on that. Some of the things that the wisdom there, I'm like, wow. You know, I was challenged with that as a young man as well. One chapter of Proverbs per day. And you read some of these things and it's like, it's no good. It's no good, says the merchant, you know, bartering over something. And then he runs off bragging, what a great deal I got. You know, yep. I'm like, you know, people have not changed, you know, a lot over this time.
Thousands and
our technologies have changed, but the hearts of men and protecting mm-hmm. your eyes as a man and wandering and what do you dwell on? What appetites, you know, where do you meet those needs? Right. You know, all of those things are so applicable right now. They're not outdated and obsolete.
And there's no point, like it says in Proverbs 19:19. Getting an angry man out of trouble because he's just going to get right back into it.
Yep.
Wow. It's true. Like
a dog to his vomit, he returns to his folly. Like we say these things all the time with, you know, we're commenting on life. We're like, there he is again. It's disgusting. And he's still doing it again. So,
amen.
All right. Well, we thank you for your time. I want to bring attention to the perilous fight overcoming our culture's war on the American family. I think family is mm-hmm. is the building that protects us all from the weather, from the storms. And we're going to survive and thrive based on the strength of our families as a country, one way or another. It's not going to be a politician that's going to save us. It's going to be us returning to the family, and that mm-hmm. that being that hedge of protection.
And before we let you go, Flyover family, I just want to take you back to AmericanCornerstone.org. And I just want to ask you, Dr. Carson, what would you highlight from that website? If people are going to go there, where would you want to draw their attention?
Well, there's so much on that website. It'll keep you entertained for days at a time. Mm. But I would especially draw people's attention to the Little Patriots program. It's free of charge. It's a very elaborate internet-based teaching system that can be used in public schools, private schools, home schools, charter schools, all over the place. It's growing very, very rapidly. It's underwritten by very patriotic Americans who realize that we have to get the truth to our children.
Yes.
And I also draw people's attention to the Executive Branch for America. Again, a free program in which you can be certified to learn how our government actually works, because we need people with conservative values to get involved in government, not just to complain about it. Mm-hmm. Because if we all leave, then who's left? And we have to have a counterbalance in there.
So true.
All of it's free of charge, by the way.
I love
absolutely
it.
Amazing.
Dr. Ben Carson, I was nervous about this interview. You're truly a hero, but it's kind of, you know, fine. You're pretty relatable. I found something you're not good at. And you kind of stink at retiring. you have a lot of other
We're
wins.
We're glad you stink at
but,
that.
But you have failed the retirement game completely. And I'm so thankful for it.
Praise the Lord.
Thank you again, Dr. Carson.
Very grateful that you all are willing to do what you do. You could be doing anything you wanted to. And, you know, it's patriots like you and many of those who are listening. Together, we can save this country.
This is a crazy time to be alive.
Well, just in our lifetime, it used to be where you'd hear your grandparents talk about how cheap gas was and stuff. And it was 75 years before, 50 years you know, before.
And so we've seen a lot of changes since Biden took office. $700 more a month
than what you needed in January of 21 when he took office.
You might hear these kind of things and think, oh, that's overwhelming. I can't control the government. I can't control what they're doing. I can't control the spending. But we can take care of ourselves.
You want to make sure that you're buying bullion from somebody that you can trust and someone that does not charge you a commission when you go to sell.
If there's going to be a commission, have it on the front end, not the back end when it skyrockets. And now you're like, oh my gosh, look at this big, huge commission I got to pay because it's on the back end before I sell it.
You can buy an ounce of silver for $23. So this is something everybody can get into. And if silver goes to $50, if it goes to $75, if it goes to $100, all of those profits are yours. And that's happening while the dollar is buying less and less at the actual grocery store.
So you can go to flyovergold.com, fill out your information. When you do that, someone from Dr. Kirk's team will get a hold of you to set up a free consultation. It doesn't cost you any money whatsoever. Or to do the same thing, you can just call 720-605-3900.
All right, Flyover. Flyover family. My name is Avery Whited. I'm the daughter of David and Stacy. I'm just moving in, so I had to get an order for my pillow and get the things that I needed. So let's look inside. I got some MyPillow towels, kitchen towels. I got some of their Giza sheets. Now, I've never actually been able to use them, but I've heard amazing things from my parents about them. And last but not least, something for Charlie. Hey, dog bed. All right, Charlie, let's go put this in the dryer and fluff it up for you. Come on, buddy. Nice and warm and fluffy. Perfect for my little guy. Come here, Charlie. All right, if you want to get your own products, go to mypillow.com and use promo code FLYOVER to save up to 66% off.